Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood on the Eshcast.
On Tuesday, the J-pop and alternative hotspot hits your eardrums on No Borders, No Race.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, with the live issues program's post-episode recaps on live right after your favorite shows and taking all of your questions.
It's going down each week, only in the land of Ash. Nerdcore at its finest.
E3 2016 has come and gone, but the event still lingers in our minds. Which games shined the brightest, and which ones are best left forgotten? Join me, King Baby Duck, along with Bjork and the DCD, as we talk about the highs, the lows, and the somewhere in betweens of this year's Electronic Entertainment Expo. This is the E3 2016 Post Show Spectacular. Game on, bitches! Welcome, gamers and techies, to the E3 2016 post-show spectacular. I am your King Baby Duck, Evan Borgo. Thank you once again for tuning in. And today, I'm being joined by two of my best buddies in the gaming journalism scene. First and foremost, she is a fellow writer for the Electric Sisterhood, who spends her spare time dealing with angry senior citizens who accidentally bought tickets to Ozfest. Please welcome April Carlson, better known as Bjork.
Oh, that's awesome. Hey.
Why am I paying so much for Ozzy Osbourne? Back in my day, I could have seen him at the Alamo for $12. What gives?
There absolutely should be a senior discount for that show.
And of course, he's one half of the Another Retro Gaming podcast, as well as a writer for Opshead, Marooners Rock, and a few other places he'll gladly plant his flag. The George Clooney of gaming journalism, the DCD, Robert Workman.
This is like the third E3 podcast I've done in like the last 48 hours.
Yeah, and all three of us were, last 48 hours, I was about to say. We've done, like,
yeah, dude, this is... it's kind of crazy. I did the throwdown with, like, Tony Polanco and all them, and then I did our own Ardcast wrap-up with Jake from The Coalition. So this is technically my third podcast in, like, 48 hours.
Jeez, man.
It's madness.
It is madness. Well, I thank you for still joining us for this post-show. But before we go into that, I know that you, Robert, have a couple words you'd like to say about something non-E3 related.
All right. I'm just trying to figure out how Roland Emmerich and their team could blow a big popcorn movie like Independence Day Resurgence out of proportion. You know what I mean? It used to be that, you know, directors knew what goes into a good popcorn movie. Pacific Rim, Guillermo del Toro nailed it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Mad Max Fury Road, you know? Everything like that. It was just really, you know, George Miller nailed that, you know? But then Independence Day Resurgence was so off. And this is in comparison to the 96 Independence Day, which was a cheese fest in itself. It was.
Right.
It was a cheese fest, but it was a great cheese fest. This was just terrible. I think my big problem with it was they didn't have Will Smith. They added a bunch of new actors, like, you know, Liam Hemsworth and all them, and they tried to fill in, like, for him, and they brought in some of the old faces, like Jeff Goldblum, Bill Pullman, Judd Hirsch. Even Judd Hirsch came back, you know, but they couldn't get Will Smith. And they, like, hammered the point home that he died. He's dead, you know? They wouldn't shut up about him being dead. We get it.
Wait, he dies?
He dies.
Yeah, he dies in the day he dies in the... Well, he's not... He's already dead by the time the film starts. and it's terrible. I mean, the acting just wasn't that good. Even I think like the best guy who had the best role was Brent Spiner as that kooky scientist. He came back and he added some great cheese to this otherwise worthless affair. The effects were good, especially in 3D, but the story was terrible. And the movie was just a setup for a third movie.
Are you kidding me?
No. Independence Day ended perfectly. Be like, happy Independence Day, son. Next one's like, well, let's go after them. No. You be thankful you're alive. What the hell?
Oh, my God. It's kind of like what Robert Rodriguez tried to do with Machete Kills.
Or for that matter, like Sin City, A Dame to Kill For. You know? This was just a disappointing sequel all around. They took the whole popcorn movie theory and they threw it out the window trying to piece something together. And I was completely let down. I walked out of the theater by the time I heard everything about what was going on with Brexit and everything like that. And it just felt like the world was caving in on me. And if I didn't go home and watch something like Ghostbusters or Independence Day right away, I would have drunken myself into a stupor.
Yikes. You know what? The way that you are describing this is sounding very much like how I felt about the third Transformers movie. Where it just took the cheesiness out of it and tried to take itself seriously. And you can't take a film seriously that's about giant fucking robots.
And you know what? I mean, a lot of people dissed on Jurassic World last year, but I had fun with it. Okay, yes. There was a lady in high heels running away from the T-Rex, but that's just the stupidity of it. You know, whatever. This one, I think the most corniest scene I remember, and it is a spoiler, but I don't give a shit, was Liam Hemsworth peeing on an alien ship.
You get to see his penis?
No, it's PG-13, April. That's it. She's like, I have concerns.
Well, that looks like April's not going to see that movie because Liam Hemsworth's penis isn't shown.
No, it's not. Just his pee. Oh my God. That's the first thing April asked. Forget the aliens. Can you see his wang? Can you?
It's Hemsworth, you guys.
Yeah, but he was terrible. The new actors were just terrible. Like I said, Brent Spiner stole the show. What little show there is. I mean, even like Chris Gore, who did like the old Attack of the Show DB Doomsday stuff, he saw it, and his picture was nothing but him flipping off the ticket stub and saying it was the worst movie of any summer. Worse than Transformers, worse than, you know, Jurassic World, worse than a lot of this crap.
Wow. And
it was just, I mean, it's going to make money this weekend, but really, guys, do yourself a favor and stick with the original. This movie does not do any merit to the list.
If I could add just my two cents about Roland Emmerich just for a moment. You know, I've been getting basically sick and tired of him for many years about all of his disaster films, because that seemed like all he wanted to do was just destroy the world. And a couple years ago, I made a comment on Facebook or something where I said I would like to see him just try his hand at doing something that is more personal to him. Something more that's about his demographic. And you know what? He tried to do it with the Stonewall movie, and he fucked that up too!
Oh, well, and it gets worse. He wants to remake Stargate.
Fuck!
He wants to make a remake it into a trilogy, and I'm like, okay, dude, you've already fucked up enough of our memories. You've already fucked up BC. You tried to make John Cusack an apocalypse survivor. You've already done enough damage.
Look,
seriously, 2012 was like, let's see how we can kill John Cusack, and he survives everything.
Look, I'm all down for a new Stargate film, but make it based on the TV series, not the film.
Won't. It's Roland Emmerich, like he does anything for the fans anymore.
Oh, God.
You know what? This is depressing, but you know what? This show is not about depression. This show is about the celebration of E3. We all went.
Yes.
Unfortunately, Rochelle was not with us because she had to take care of something. And in fact, I think her hubby's actually going through something at the hospital right now.
Yeah.
So my heart goes out to her. This show is for you, Rochelle. Love you.
Absolutely.
Big hugs.
Big hugs, indeed. Big hugs. Now,
I'm sorry, I'm overtaking the podcast again.
It's okay.
Welcome to the DCD podcast.
Shut up, April. How you doing, everybody? Oh, all right, Evan, you're driving this thing.
Okay. Now, April, I know this was your first E3 in a while, so I'm curious, how was this one compared to your previous experience? Has anything changed drastically?
Not really. I mean, I did go for a day last year, but I went more as a spectator as opposed to as press. And that was a really different experience. I didn't like it. But I think the biggest difference this year was the absence of, the EA booth and how some of the booths were a little bit smaller and not being able to get into the Nintendo booth. That was really, really hard to come to terms with because I did not get the chance to go inside and see that. But it was a good E3. I think for me, and I don't want to be a Debbie Downer in that sense, there wasn't a lot of surprises. There weren't a lot of surprises with E3. And I think it was because a lot of the rumors and stuff had already kind of come out, and there were a couple of leaks before all the press conferences. So I didn't feel like super surprised about almost anything. I think the only thing that I wasn't expecting was an actual release date for The Last Guardian. But other than that, I kind of heard rumors of a new God of War. I kind of heard rumors, here and there of other things. So, but it was still fun because video games.
Yeah. So how would you rate this year's E3 in general on a scale from 0 to 5?
I'm going to give it a 4 because there isn't a 5 yet. I have not yet gone to a 5 E3.
Okay.
But I'm going to give it 4 because there were some really good games shown, and it was an overall great experience. I was only there for the 2 days, but I did get to see a lot of old friends, and it's always fun to just be around video games and people that love video games for 2 days. So I'm going to give it a 4.
Okay. DCD, what about you?
I'm going to give it a 4 as well. There was a lot missing from this year's show. We had EA missing. Activision had an off-floor thing. Wargaming wasn't there. Disney didn't really have anything planned now that canceled Infinity. And for some strange reason, I just did not feel compelled to check out Naughty America's thing. But there were a lot of great companies on the floor. There were a lot of great games. Ubisoft had a ton. 2K's booth was amazing. So there was a lot of good experiences, and I got to catch up with a lot of old friends. In fact, we had you guys on, both of you,
yep,
during last week's live episode of the ARGcast. You guys can listen to that over at retrozap.com, by the way. It was a great episode. We had a lot of time. We had Justin Chow with us. We had Ben Horn with us. We had a bunch of people just talking with us about what they loved about the show while they were at the show.
Right.
I think we were one of the few podcasts that actually recorded at the show. So,
yeah.
I think between the experience with the friends, between the booth, and between all the great games I saw, I'd give it a 4 out of 5 as well. It was not my favorite E3. My favorite E3 remains my first one at E3 2000. That was flipping amazing. I got to meet Shigeru Miyamoto. We played Mario Tennis for 3 hours. We stayed at the shitty Kawada Hotel. Just everything about it was bad but good. So... nice. Nothing
means that. Okay, so you know what? I'm going to go with you guys as well. I'm giving it a 4 as well. There was a lot of great games I went hands-on with, but I just didn't leave the convention 100% satisfied. Maybe around 80-85% satisfied. I felt like there was like one or two things that I wish I could have seen before I called it a day, like Persona 5 and some of the PlayStation VR stuff. But, E3 is a massive show, and it's really hard to see everything in that 3-day period. Plus, when it comes to the best show, last year, E3 2015 is still hands down my favorite E3 I've gone to, which was like the only convention that I've ever attended, be it an Anime Boston or PAX East, any convention where I left where nothing disappointed me whatsoever.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think what it was, there was a couple of things. Like, first of all, I think we were expecting some major new announcements that we didn't get. We wanted Red Dead 2, we didn't get it. We wanted this, we didn't get it. This and that and everything like that. But the pre-E3 shows, I still think, set the stage for what this year's show was about. At EA, we got Titanfall 2 gameplay that looked amazing, and we got some Battlefield 1 stuff, and then moving on to Bethesda, we got the re-announcement of Prey, we got Quake Champions, we got Dishonored 2 gameplay, which looks really good, and then we had that cool after party. And then Monday, we had, I'm not taking over the podcast, I'm recapping the show. April, calm down. April actually said, this is another show where Robert's taking over. Monday we had Microsoft Showcase with Project Scorpio, Gears 4 and all that. Then we had Ubisoft, which by the way, I hated because we got Overflow for some reason, but we still got to see Steep and, you know, Ghost Recon Wildlands and all that. And then Sony's show, which I think their press conference stole the show.
Right.
God of War. Hideo Kojima's game, Death Stranding, you know, Spider-Man looks so damn good, you know, all this stuff. And then they had the little VR showcase afterwards. So
right.
That kind of recaps all the stuff we saw before the show. There were some letdowns that we didn't see all the games we wanted to, but it was still a nice mix of old and new. And I still don't know how I feel about the Project Scorpio announcements.
Right. So
I don't know.
I wanted to touch about that because out of all the press conferences, I want to touch about, like, who was the best out of them. And it's funny that we were talking about Project Scorpio in line during Ubisoft because we were joking about, oh, I guess Sony's like totally reworking their entire press conference to show off the Neo, even though they said they weren't going to do it. But then Sony was like, we don't need to fucking talk about the Neo. We've got all this cool shit happening without the Neo.
Yeah, they set the standard forward in terms of just going into the games. They didn't even have any presenters on stage. The only guy they brought on stage was like the guy to introduce Crash Bandicoot Remastered, the Hideo Kojima, and whoever did the intro, obviously Yoshida doing the intro at the beginning. They didn't really have anybody come out and do any speeches. They made it about the games. Resident Evil 7, Biohazard, Spider-Man, God of War, all this, you know? And boom, that's how it should be.
Absolutely. April, do you agree? I know you weren't there, but I know you were watching it from your computer, correct?
It was, yeah. I was watching it on, I think I was watching it on Twitch. But, yeah, I do agree. I think PlayStation overall had had more of a wow factor for me. You know, with and you mentioned the Kojima game, the Death Stranding, that was a big surprise. I was holding my breath thinking it might have been Silent Hills, you know, a re-announcement or something, but I'm okay with the new one. That's cool. But I was actually pretty impressed with their VR showing. I mean, it's going to come out, I think, in October with 50 games, and that Resident Evil is going to be playable from start to finish in VR. It kind of got me excited. I'm still not going to jump out and buy it right away. I still want to wait and see how things go, but I was pretty impressed with the possible lineups and the experiences that they're setting up, at least probably for the next, you know, to prepare us for the games that are going to start coming out, I'm sure, in the next year or two.
And not to mention with Bethesda going deep into VR as well, with announcements of Doom in VR and Fallout 4 too, which I think is great to have. I'm wondering if you're going to be able to do that with the PlayStation VR as well.
Right, right.
I mean, I'm intrigued by the technology. I'm still not entirely sold yet, but I do like what they're doing with some of it. Like, I bet that Resident Evil 7 game will make people poop their pants.
The non-VR version made me scream like a little baby, so yeah.
Yeah.
Wear it will. Brown, folks. Wear your brown.
All right. So, let's talk about the games that wowed us at E3. What made you walk away going, I need to play this day one?
God, you know, God of War. I really want to see where they take with that new direction and everything like that. Also, Spider-Man, and I'm going to say right on a limb here, Ghost Recon Wildlands. This game was incredibly fun when I played it. I mean, Ubisoft's booth was like, you know, they had like 900 people scrambling in the back, be like, where do you want these guys to go? Where do you want these guys to go? But finally, I got in to play like Ghost Recon and was like, yes, this is worth it.
Yeah, that game looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of fun. I'm excited for that one.
All right. What about, well, God of War wasn't one that you didn't go hands-on with. What were some that you did go hands-on with? Like, for example...
Well, I thought you were just talking, like, most anticipated in general.
Oh, okay,
I mean, God of War... Because God of War did look unreal.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. New approach is a novel concept. I mean, we were expecting something like him ripping somebody in half or going after a serpent or everything like that. This looks like a more humanity-based tale where he's trying to educate this young kid and trying to survive in this Norse world, you know, and everything like that. And then Spider-Man, well, Spider-Man just does... It looks like Insomniac did a lot of notes on what Beenox did with their games and really just went out of their way to, you know, try like a new experience that felt more like a genuine Spider-Man game for this generation.
Correct.
So I'm just excited about both of them. I mean, sorry, I didn't know you were looking my hands on.
No, that's okay. It's okay. I'm sorry. It's my fault. It's my bad.
Damn it, Evan!
I should have been more specific. But, like, for me, like, one of the first games I think of course, is Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. But just this whole massive world adventure with the Hero of Time, with some great fighting mechanics, beautiful areas to just discover. Link can actually jump for once. don't think outside of Smash Brothers, there hasn't been a game where Link could jump.
And, let's talk about this real quick.
Yes.
You actually waited for the demo.
Yes. So let me see if I could just recapture the whole story aspect of it. Ben and I, we waited until set up from 7:30 a.m. in the morning, Thursday, to go play this demo. We were at the front of the section of it to go right in when the doors opened at 10. When the doors opened up at 10, it was like that opening scene from Pink Floyd, The Wall, where everyone comes running through and screaming, running towards the whole Legend of Zelda a display area. And when Ben and I got in line, it was still a 2-hour wait to play the game.
Madness, right?
Yeah.
That is crazy.
And by the first 10 minutes of Thursday, the line was already capped for the day. Like, that was ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. I mean, you had to get in one line to get a ticket. Then you had to get in another line just to play the game.
Well, actually...
So it was like they divided it up.
Actually, this time around, we just got the ticket and then we walked in.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah. Oh. I think what they did with the day three thing is they opened up more for the regular people to check out. I think some of the Wii U's that were there were reserved for like special people of the press that had appointments, and I think that Thursday they opened up all of them for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like what they did with the Wii U back in 2011.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's still, I mean, I'm sure the booth was nice and everything like that, but there could have been a better organized way for them to do that. But from what I heard, everybody who played it said it was this outstanding open world game with a lot of different changes to the Zelda formula, but still that familiarity that made it feel like it was the most evolved Zelda experience to date. I mean, you played it.
Yes. Well, it's weird because it has that sort of Legend of Zelda meets Skyrim sort of mentality into it. You get that Hyrule is this large vicinity, this large chunk of land. But this is the first time where you're actually going to truly experience Hyrule in its most fullest form. And it's quite, to be honest with you, it's kind of overwhelming to see just how huge of a game this is. And it's crazy. But the whole concept of the game, the whole, this is a Link that's been reincarnated, and a lot of people already are saying that this might be the Link that they talk about before the events of Wind Waker.
Hmm.
But being able to play as Link, trying out all the different maneuvers, there was even some things that I wasn't able to do that Ben was telling me that he was doing, like surfing on your shield as you're like going down a hill or something like that. Like, I didn't do that.
I saw the videos of that. Yeah.
But when it comes to this game, like, I don't know if you guys heard, but Monolith Studios, the guys who worked on the Xenoblade, they're helping out with this game, and I think they're an amazing candidate to choose when it comes to a huge open-world Zelda game.
That's a real surprise in itself. I think the main reason I didn't go, besides the fact that I didn't want to waste like 4 or 6 hours waiting in line, was because I really want to kind of save myself, because this game is going to be released simultaneously for Wii U and the new NX.
Right.
So, I mean, like, imagine playing the Wii U version and everything like that, and then imagine the enhancements that are going to go to the NX version.
That's what I'm thinking,
you know, like
too.
Like 60 frames per second, you know, better controls. Who knows? I mean, it's sort of like, if you take a look in contrast to what happened with Twilight Princess when it came up for GameCube, as well as the Wii U.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Although I've talked to a lot of people, and a lot of them do prefer like the original GameCube controls over the Wii ones, because it was during that time when they were still trying to figure out how to do the Wiimote sort of thing.
Oh, I get that. You know, some people prefer the old school style compared to like, hey, let me move my arm around like a dick.
Well, you know, there's actually a couple of interesting things about the new Zelda game, because we don't know a lot about the NX. But what's interesting is that Link uses a tablet. So it makes you kind of wonder if him using a tablet is any indication of maybe the gamepad moving forward from the Wii U and being usable on the NX. or possibly the NX having its own kind of gamepad style of controller.
I was thinking the exact same thing too, but I wasn't exactly sure like how it was going to be implemented. Like, how can they do that? Like, how can they make it work?
They have to be careful with it, because you remember how the gamepad integration went with Star Fox Zero. It messed up the game.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So you got to play it cautious when you do the gamepad integration and not make it too oriented to the point where you can't even see what's happening in the general experience. Which is kind of why I think I'm waiting for the NX version, because it's going to be more streamlined.
Mm, absolutely.
Because that's the other thing to consider too. Because if they've probably done a lot of the development on the Wii U, so the tablet integration is probably going to be there. So what's going to change in the NX version? I don't think we know that yet, just because we don't know anything about the NX except for that it's coming out in March. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, some things might change. You might actually see, I wouldn't say two completely different games, but I mean, Twilight Princess on the Wii was not Twilight Princess on the GameCube, just because of the Wii controls and everything, which I just could not play because I really sucked at the Wii. But, you know, that's kind of interesting. And then the other thing that I thought was really cool about Zelda was, Ocarina of Time really introduced a lot of new things, you know, like Z-targeting, which a lot of games started to adopt. And they've always sort of pushed the envelope a little bit, a little bit at a time, where other games kind of taking what they've learned from Zelda games and kind of integrating into there. So it is really kind of cool to actually see a lot of other games influence how this Legend of Zelda is going, you know, making it more open world and, you know, kind of having that Skyrim feel or sort of that Witcher 3 feel to it. So it's kind of cool to have them have other games start to influence it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what about you two? Like, what were some games that you played that just really made you excited to play on day one of the release?
Ghost Recon, like I said, it is really that kind of game that just draws you in, especially with the right group. And while we're at it, Titanfall 2, which actually wasn't on the show floor, it was over at EA Play, which was like right down the street over there at the in the little LA library. This one was a lot of fun too. I mean, they made a number of improvements to the original game, the inclusion of a grappling hook, the inclusion of new titans, and it just felt a lot better to me. It felt like a really more complete game, which I thought was really surprising, because it was like, you know, the original Titanfall did pretty good for what it was, and you know, this one was actually almost like they took the feedback regarding the original game and they just implemented it in the right way too. I was really surprised by that.
Yeah, so, I mean, because a lot of people kind of forgot about Titanfall after a few months, so so hopefully they saw what happened with that and be like, alright, I think we need to add this, and this, and that way we don't have to worry about us becoming another Evolve.
Exactly. And you know, it was just a matter of, go ahead, April.
Oh no, I was saying Evolve what?
Yeah, I know, right? I think just overall, there were a bunch of different games that I really enjoyed. I mean, I even went back to the old school. Like, Natsum had a couple of games. They had River City for 3DS,
yep,
you know, which is a throwback to the old school days, and Wild Guns Reloaded, which I had a good time with playing with the producer of that. But, you know, there was also other stuff, you know, like Forza Horizon 3. You were racing with me, Evan.
Yes, Forza Horizon 3 was fantastic. It was fantastic. Gorgeous.
You didn't get first place, but it was still fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, April.
Oh, you? You're lucky.
And also, I got to look at Yooka-Laylee, and I'll tell you, this is a fun little throwback to the good old days of the N64 platformers. I'm excited for this one. And Bloodstained.
You get to play for good things.
Igarashi was there. He was there consoling people, like how to play in bad English, but still, he was still. I don't care. Just show me where to go. Okay, we're good.
Now, if you want to talk other games that were on Kickstarter, I want to talk a little bit about Shantae Half-Genie Hero, which, in my honest opinion, the Shantae series is a truly underrated series from WayForward. And I feel like that this game is finally going to gain some attention with its first true HD console release. The animation for the game looks fantastic, almost like an actual bona fide cartoon. I love that her magical powers have returned from Risky's Revenge. And what's good too is its funny bone is still intact. It knows not to take itself too seriously. It knows how to have fun with itself while poking fun at itself. And for a game that made a fifth of what Mighty No. 9 did on Kickstarter, it's ready to, like, practically blow Concepts game right out of the water.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, considering, like, the feedback that's gone into that, you know, I it's kind of nuts. I didn't think it was half bad, but a lot of people did. But no, I mean, like, Bloodstained did the exact same thing. Here was a game that really built up a lot of money on Kickstarter and everything like that. People weren't expecting it and everything like that. And those people that played it, including myself, were blown away by the Castlevania-style quality that went into this game. I mean, people were even talking about this could be the next forthcoming Symphony of the Night, even though it's not a sequel. You know, it just feels like that spiritual successor that we deserve. Now, Shantae, the only thing I remember seeing from Shantae was that hot model that was walking around.
They were in the XC Games booth.
Yes. But the game looked good from what I saw. So I wish WayForward all the best of luck. They do great with their Shantae games. So.
Absolutely.
I want to talk about another one real quick while we're talking about, like, developers that were really coming up, you know, with a game that was coming out of nowhere. Lawbreakers. Bosky Studios and Cliff Pazinski, they had this little booth off the show floor where they were hosting these multiplayer sessions. And this was before the open alpha that took place this past weekend. It was a lot of fun to play. And, you know, there were different styles and everything like that, like Overwatch. You know, there was a lot of frantic stuff in terms of capturing bases and stuff like that. And this game really has the potential to be a big hit. I was really surprised at how well it turned out. So this was another nice surprise on the show floor, even though it wasn't really, you know, it was in that same section where, you know, CG Projekt Red had their thing with Gwent.
Yeah.
Oh, in the concourse hall, right?
We're all yeah,
in the
concourse.
In the upper west hall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, like, some of the cool stuff just wasn't on the show floor. You know, like, we both went to the concourse hall, Evan, and we both saw Telltale's Batman game. I'm assuming
yeah.
you went.
Well, yeah. I didn't see the presentation of it, but I went into the booth and I got a free drink from it. And, oh.
That's plus enough.
It was.
The booth itself. But the game is very cool, very episodic, you know, good art style and everything like that. But it focuses more on telling the story of Bruce Wayne than it does Batman. Because you know how Telltale's storytelling works with their games.
Yeah.
You know, they can't just make another Batman Returns for Super NES or anything like that. They have to go a different route. And it looks like it really pays off, based on what I've seen so far. Mm.
Well, we don't have to wait too long for that one. I think the first episode comes out in a couple this weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Like in July, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. All right, what about you, April? What really wowed you on the E3 floor this year?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't get to play a lot of games. I only got a really small handful of them. But I'm going to have to go with Robert on this one and say Ghost Recon Wildlands was probably my favorite that I actually got to play. The control's still a little loose, which I'm hoping they'll tighten that up a little bit. But overall, it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I am actively looking for my squad, so I am taking applications currently. But I would love to play that entire game in a four-player co-op or in a four-player multiplayer. I think that would be fantastic because apparently the game is going to be playable from start to finish with four people.
Okay, so April, I think we're getting the hint. Yes, we will join your group to play this game.
She didn't ask you.
No, I just think it's gonna be a lot of fun. And then if you want to go through and play it by yourself, you can absolutely do that. So, yeah, that one looks cool. And then actually, Watch Dogs. I did get a hands on with Watch Dogs, and while I didn't play the first game, I did really enjoy what I played of Watch Dogs 2. It was kind of like a Grand Theft Auto with hacking. Which made it a little bit more interesting for me because of the, you know, the hacking aspect kind of intrigues me. So that does look interesting. But hands down for me, it was Ghost Recon Wildlands. And then if I had seen Zelda, I'm pretty sure it would have been Zelda.
You know, another game I kind of want to bring up here because it was also at Ubisoft and it had a great presentation in its own right, especially over the first game, which I was really surprised by, South Park, The Fractured But Whole.
Yeah.
That one looked like a lot of fun, too. It looked like Trey Parker and Matt Stone were really digging more into the story this time around and having fun with the references and all that stuff. And the battle system, dude, if there are any more farts in this game, I don't know.
They're like the superhero route, you know. They kind of did the sort of the RPG hero route, and now they're kind of doing the superheroes. So that definitely looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And now, you know, Pepper South Park. So
I don't know if you remember this or not, but when the first South Park game came out, Stick of Truth, it was at one of the Xbox conferences. They had announced that there was going to be superhero DLC. So this makes me wonder if this game, The Fractured Butthole, was supposed to be just a bit of like a side couple hour episode, like campaign or something, that just got expanded into a full-fledged game.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I did not realize that. Cool.
We have to understand, like, the Stick of Truth spent so much time in development, like over at THQ and everything like that, before they got shifted over to Ubisoft. So probably something got lost in the shuffle. But I'll tell you, it's just great that, you know, they're finally making a good superhero tale. And I'll tell you, all these Civil War jabs, I don't know, dude.
No, they're good. I can't wait to play this game in December.
I agree. And isn't it, don't you get the Stick of Truth for free? Is that only if you pre-order it within a certain amount of time?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. But let me ask, because I know, Robert, you went hands-on with Agents of Mayhem, right?
I did, yes. And it was a lot of fun.
Yes.
Definitely something in the spiritual vein of the Saints Row games. What I really like is the ability to switch between characters.
I like that too. And you know what? I like that this game finds usage to switching out your one of three characters. Because a lot of times when I play these sorts of games where you get to choose your main character and then your secondary characters, like 98% of the time I find myself just sticking with that one main character. I like how Agents of Mayhem puts it in there that makes you have to change these characters because you need to get good usage out of everybody in order for you to succeed.
Did you just say Eggs of Mayhem?
Agents. Might have been a connection error.
Eggs of Mayhem. Dude, Will Powers is going to kick your ass. No, I mean, Agents of Mayhem was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it and everything like that. I didn't get to see one of their Deep Silver's games. I think it was just Killing Floor 2 in F1 2016. So, obviously, yeah. Agents was the big draw. I was happy to play it and everything like
Me
that.
Me too.
So, it was a good time.
It looked cool. I did not get to play it, but it definitely looked cool.
Yeah, like a lot of this stuff was off the show floor this year. I played Tekken 7 up in the Bandai Namco booth. It was actually really fun. They kind of made the fighting a little more cinematic this time around, but they kept like some of the, like, you know, the Tekken fundamentals. And like at one point, you're like fighting in a stage and everything like that, and all of a sudden half the stage collapses, and you kind of like jump out of the way. Then you look at each other and like idiots, you keep fighting. I guess. I don't know, but it's just it's one of those fun games that really has a lot of the stuff dialed into it. Most of their other stuff, you know, Xenoverse 2, like Anabase, you know, God Hand, which actually looked pretty good. But yeah, it wasn't God Hand. It was something else. I forgot the name.
God Eater.
God Eater. Sorry. Why am I thinking God Hand?
Yeah, I was like, God Hand? Really? That was there?
No. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to get your hopes up. But there were a lot of great games off the show floor. I mean, like, for some reason, I can't get into Gwent. I can't. It looked great and everything like that, and fans will enjoy it, but I could not get into Gwent.
I'll be blunt with you, too. Like, that was, like, the only aspect of The Witcher 3 I didn't play. Like, I tried it once. I was like, it really isn't for me. I'm just going to skip all the Gwent stuff.
Well, you know what, though? Gwent was actually kind of fun. My only issue with it was that The Witcher 3 is an immense game. It's gigantic. I've already spent a good 200 hours playing, but I didn't want to play Gwent because I really wanted to play The Witcher. But I'm actually kind of excited about a standalone game because then I can actually play some Gwent and just play Gwent as opposed to load The Witcher, find a guy who's going to play Gwent with me and then play, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. So
that totally makes sense.
Yeah, I did not get a chance to see it or get any hands-on on it, so I am hoping that they kind of kept it true to the game and you know, tweaked whatever might have need tweaking. But I mean, I really enjoyed the three Gwent games I think I've played in The Witcher. I've enjoyed, but overall, I have just wanted to play The Witcher.
No, I totally agree with you there. Let me ask you guys this question too. I know it's a little bit similar to the previous one, but what surprised you at E3? Like, what was something that you didn't expect to come across at E3, but then walked away like, wow, you've got my attention with this one?
I'd say Mafia 3. Let's be honest, like Mafia 2 was a good game, but it was too much like in the way of like, you know, trying to be a Grand Theft Auto style clone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, whereas no, I totally Mafia agree with you. 3, that was kind of a bit of a turnoff for me with the second Mafia game. Like, I didn't even finish playing Mafia 2 because I kind of got bored with it, to be blunt.
Yeah, whereas Mafia 3 looks like it actually looks a lot more devoted to its era, looks a lot more devoted to its gameplay, it looks a lot more devoted just basically all around. It looks like really just something that's well put together.
They had a cool booth, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah, their booth was amazing.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool booth. They even had a live band in there at one point.
And they had tarot card readers, too.
What about the funeral procession making the rounds?
Yeah, yeah,
that was
like
nuts.
Walking around and everything like that, all of a sudden the band kicked in. Oh, this is going to be good. This is going to be good. What's up, guys?
And I like how you have to divvy up the places you conquer to your comrades, and like how every little decision you make in a game can come to either benefit you or bite you in the ass in the long run.
Yeah, I know. You could have so many partners and everything like that, but if you showed favoritism to like one partner too many, you know, it kind of screwed you over.
Yeah. And it was good that we actually got to see that during the presentation, because that means like when we actually get to play this game, we'll know that it's best to try to give everybody their own equal share and try to not fuck anybody over, or else you might find yourself dead in a ditch somewhere.
Yep, exactly.
Now, if you want to talk about a game that really surprised me, it would have to be Fate Extella the Umbral Star, and it's the latest in the popular Fate Stay series, but it's the first action-oriented one. And it has this sort of Dynasty Warriors-style gameplay where it's like one versus like hundreds, but you know that those hundreds of soldiers don't have really a chance to stand up against this one super massive character that you play. I love the fight and battle sequences. They're just dazzling to watch. The anime visuals were gorgeous, the transformations were great, and just around some pretty kick-ass badass throwdowns that occurred during when you play. And as I said in my review, this game has my fullest attention, and I can't wait to see what Fate Extella is going to showcase in the full version of the game.
Some of that stuff was really surprising. I'll tell you, one of the things that really took me by surprise, and this is going to be a little bit weird because, you know, like when we first saw Call of Duty Infinite Warfare, the first thing we thought was, shit, they're going to mess it up, you know.
This is boring. Why are they doing all the future stuff? This is stupid. Let's go back to the old days. Oh, Battlefield 1, you're doing that? You have my attention. Fuck you, Call of Duty. But then you saw what they showed off at the PlayStation conference.
Okay, who's taking over the podcast now?
Technically me, because I'm the host of it.
Yeah, but you know what? I was really impressed by what I saw in the Infinite Warfare demo behind closed doors. They showed a lot more stuff with the ground combat. They showed how everything integrates between space and what you're doing on the ground. And it looks really well polished. You know, and say what you will about it taking place in the future or whatever that shit. I know you're going to go off for an hour there, Evan. But I really liked what I saw with Infinite Warfare. Will it be able to keep up with Titanfall 2? That I don't know. Titanfall 2 was amazing. And for that matter, Battlefield 1 was a lot of fun, too. It's going to be an interesting battle, because what are we getting? We're getting Battlefield 1 on October 21st. We're getting Titanfall 2 on October 28th. Then we're getting Infinite Warfare on the 4th of November. It's ridiculous, like, how hard we're going to be hit in that time.
Hey, and in between that, we're going to get Last Guardian on October 25th, and we're going to get Dishonored 2 on, I believe it's November 11th.
It's ridiculous. There's And it's just, and Gears 4, I believe, in the middle of all that, too.
Yep, like Gears 4 as well.
And Mafia 3.
Mafia 3.
Is like December 6th, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's going to be
Watch Dogs 2.
Yeah.
November 15th, yeah.
This is why it sucks to be both an anime fan and a gaming fan. You get so broke so quickly.
Yeah. Oh, man, but I'll tell you this, you know, I really like what I saw with Infinite Warfare. And for that matter, I was really surprised at how well integrated Crash was in Skylanders Imaginators. I mean, I was kind of groaning when, you know, that was his big reveal at the Sony show instead of the remastered games they're working on. But, I mean, this guy was, like, throwing TNT crates everywhere. And I was like, yes. I don't know where he's getting them, but yes. drawing him out of his ass.
So did either of you guys get a hands-on with Battlefield 1?
No.
Mm-hmm.
I did.
I did.
Oh, you did?
I did. It was... I actually have a true story here. So I was in the middle of a match and everything like that, and I got killed 9 times. But, you know, like, the producer was talking to me. He's like, hey, man, you took it a lot better than Jamie Foxx.
Nice.
Jamie Foxx reportedly, you know, was, like, trying to do the moving and shooting thing during, like, his demo following the press conference, and he rage quit.
That's awesome.
He rage quit. Now, I swear to God, I wanted somebody to say, Ray, come back!
Yeah, I really wish I'd gotten a hands-on with Battlefield 1. I really, really wanted to play that, but unfortunately, I couldn't get there.
I'm trying to wrap my head around why Jamie Foxx and Zac Efron were there. I'm like, seriously?
Do they have all a movie coming out together?
Yeah.
Ugh. I'm like, I understand getting Snoop Dogg in there. Snoop's great. You know, he has a nice little, you know, puff of smoke surrounding him. Great, whatever. But he's awesome, you know. But Jamie Foxx and Zac Efron are the last people you think about playing video games.
Yeah, keep in mind that Snoop Dogg was in one of the Tekken games, so he is part of the gaming lore.
He is. And he, you know, he was in True Crime, you know,
Streets of L.A. Yeah. I love that game. I love playing as Snoop in that one.
And the Def Jam games. Can't forget those.
Yeah, Def Jam Time for New York.
But it was just ridiculous, like, you know, how much it was getting killed. Like, you know, that's how much I suck at Battlefield. But it looked great. It looked great. And the gameplay was really right on cue. It's just that I suck when it comes to trapping somebody.
Yeah,
oh, Call of Duty, I'll pwn everybody. But, you know, like Battlefield, I'd be like, oh, great. I need practice.
Yeah, it requires a little bit of skill, actually. So
a lot of skill. I mean, like Titanfall. Titanfall, I could rip through, like, bots like nobody's business.
Yeah.
I still have a nice kill rank. And I mean, like, Battlefield, well, you got one guy with an assist, but you died 9 times.
Yeah.
But you're good, though. You're good.
It took me a while to get through Battlefield 4, but you know I've logged in a lot of hours into that one and have gotten pretty good at the multiplayer with that. Mostly because I'm the medic and I keep everybody alive. But
are you also the medic in Overwatch?
I do. I always play Mercy in general, but you know what? Not a lot of people like to play healers. And it's not because I'm not good or don't want to play a tank or a shooter or anything like that. I just find that there is always a need for a healer in a group, and I'm actually pretty damn good at it, to be perfectly honest. Especially in Battlefield, and I think I do a pretty good job with Mercy. But I have started to play more characters in Overwatch because I realize that it is important to switch around characters depending on how the game is going. So
definitely
slightly off topic, but still games.
No, it's still games. It's still games. Now, we've talked about the good things about E3 this year. What disappointed you?
Right off the bat, there were a couple things. Like, first of all, I mean, EA's presentation was good. You know, we got to see, like, Titanfall 2, Battlefield 1, Fae, I believe it was called, the indie game there.
Yeah.
But, whatever.
V-5-0-5.
I was really disappointed at the showmanship that kind of went into that without revealing anything new. You know, like I said, I have no idea what the hell Jamie Foxx and Zac Efron were doing there. I really, you know, I like the idea of EA majors, but you didn't need to hammer the point home by actually bringing out the athletes to do absolutely nothing. You know, it just felt like the presentation was off to me. That was my most disappointing press conference.
Yeah, it was a whole lot of talk and not a lot of games.
I know. I mean, I liked that when they got into Titanfall 2's gameplay. But then they went into the talking heads thing for 10 minutes about FIFA 17. This is my journey. Let's go on my journey. Great. Okay, great. Give me the game.
Yeah.
Really. I don't want to just... But in terms of games, there was very few that disappointed me this year. But I do want to kind of dig into a couple of games.
Okay.
The first one is... You're not going to believe this. We Happy Few.
Really?
We took a look at the demo on Xbox and everything like that, and it's got all this potential to be a Bioshock thing, but the demo I played was just really kind of glitchy. I mean, it didn't really feel like the gameplay felt together or anything like that, and the graphics weren't really as good as I expected from, like, a Bioshock-esque world. You know, I understand they'll probably polish it up and everything like that, but that's yeah. not the demo you really want to present to people. I mean, you want to do it like you did at PAX South, at PAX East. You want to have this great presentation where, you know, you go in and you can see everything that the game is about while the producer's right there. You don't yeah. want to see it at a Microsoft booth in incomplete form.
Hey, is We Happy Few a retail game, or is that going to be like an Xbox Live game?
An Xbox Live game, I think.
I think it's going to be a downloadable title because it's coming out for Xbox One, PC, and I think PS4 as well.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, they hawked it as an Xbox big exclusive, but I know it's going to come out for PS4 and PC as well.
Yeah.
Another disappointment was Carmageddon. They're remaking this one. I guess the team of Team 17 is remaking it. But good God, it's coming out in like 3 weeks and everything like that. But the controls are horrible. Like, my car kept drifting all over the place. I was just trying to drive up the side of a mountain and I kept screwing up. But not because of something I did, but because the controls were so fucked up. I was like, jeez. Where are you going? Stop falling out the mountain. And they were like, when's this game coming out? July 26th. What?
Uh-oh. Oh.
At least Worms was good, but I was like, nah.
This is the one that was on Kickstarter, right?
No. This was a different one.
This is a different one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's disappointing. That is very yeah. disappointing.
Yeah, aside from that, I had very few disappointments. You know, I saw a lot of great games. You know, like, even the games that I didn't get to go hands-on with, like South Park or anything like that, and Mafia 3. I thought they were really well put together, and I was really impressed by what they offered. But there were a couple things in presentations and stuff like that where it just felt like the games didn't really come together as well. So especially We Happy Few. I've been following this one for the past couple of years and everything like that. And to play like a demo like that, I was like, yeah, this isn't what you should have put together. I mean, I know it's just E3, it's not a PAX, but still, they're
right.
They're
because I know that the PAX presentations were great for We Happy Few.
Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, aside from that, the only other real disappointment was not being able to get in and get Zelda played because of the way it was set up.
Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, very few disappointments. I mean, I think, if anything, I think I got too many good things to recommend. Like, there's one thing that we didn't mention was that Devolver Digital. They continue to have the best booth off the E3 floor because it's like a trailer park.
Yeah.
It's a trailer park with beer, with rice bowls, with SiriusXM VR, with Absolution, which is an amazing fighting game. I enjoyed the hell out of this. It was really good how like all the fighting controls came together and everything like that, and how you can involve other players and all that stuff. It was a lot of fun. And it was just, on Shadow Warrior 2, which, Evan, you played at PAX East.
Oh, yeah. Shadow Warrior 2
nuts.
It has potential to be one of this year's best games.
I agree. I mean, it's just... The reason I didn't mention Devolver is because they weren't really part of the E3 show floor. They did their own thing in their own trailer park and everything like that, and they wore their little sun caps. They were like, do you want a Sapporo? Yes, I want a Sapporo. Give me a Sapporo. And it was just so much fun how they do this thing every year, and they continued to be A+ this year. So I know we were talking about disappointments.
I think
probably my biggest disappointment is probably that E3 doesn't follow in the shoes of Devolver Digital and have beer and rice cups at their, at each booth.
Hey, I got free beer at the Sniper Elite 4 booth.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, that was good.
And the Telltale booth.
Oh, yes, and the Telltale booth. So maybe the disappointment for you would be there should be more booze being served at E3.
Right? Mafia 3 needs an open bar.
I'm surprised they didn't have one, to be honest.
Yeah, seriously. It's New Bordeaux. Come on.
Where's your wine? Anyway, at least give us some wine. Come on.
But I feel like you've gone in forever about disappointments. April, what were your biggest disappointments besides not seeing enough of me?
I think you're right, Robert. I don't really have any specific game disappointments because, again, I didn't really get a lot of hands-on with anything. I guess my biggest disappointments would be that the lines get too long. But, I mean, that's my disappointment about Disneyland. But, I think I was a little more disappointed that there were a few games on the floor that weren't playable. And if they were, I could not find them playable. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to check out Nier Automata in the Square Enix booth, but I could not find that anywhere. what was the other one? I wanted to do Horizon Dawn, but I couldn't find that on the floor. And then found out later that I guess they were doing a presentation with a hands-on afterwards.
Yeah, but something like that, but the line was ridiculous.
Line was ridiculous. So I was kind of disappointed about that because I that game looks really, really interesting. Actually, the one game I did get a hands-on that was sort of disappointing, and I don't think it's... I think it's mostly because it's completely out of context, was Final Fantasy XV. I think it is really hard to just jump into a Final Fantasy battle that's completely, a different battle system than what you're used to in, you know, a previous or any other Final Fantasy game. So that was a little disappointing to me, but again, I think that was more just out of context.
Yeah, that's about to say, because it's hard to go into just a demo of Final Fantasy and just not be told what exactly is going on before you press the start button.
Yeah, just having to guess, like, well, I guess I'll just press these buttons they're telling me to do, but not really having an idea of what you're supposed to do, where you're supposed to go, you know. But it did look it did look fantastic, and I'm sure I'll have a blast playing it and, you know, learning how to play it, and then get to the point where I'm like, okay, that demo wasn't so bad. So I think mostly my disappointments were the games I couldn't play, or that either weren't on the show floor, or like Legend of Zelda games that if I wasn't there by, you know, before 7:30 in the morning, I wasn't going to get an opportunity to play. And I just will not stand in a line that long personally. Yeah. Especially for a game that I'm probably going to be able to play in about 8 months. So those would probably be my biggest disappointments. Just stuff not there and lying.
On a side note, I gotta ask Sony, why did you have a presentation for God of War when it was exactly the same stuff you showed during the press conference?
And
poor Ben having to go through that.
I mean, seriously, did he do that? Did he stand in line?
Yes.
And seriously wait and all that stuff, and then only to come out and be like, well, that's stuff I saw in the presentation.
Yeah, luckily we didn't have to stand in line for the Days Gone presentation. We just happened to, Redmond and I just happened to walk by and see that they were accepting seats. And it was literally the exact same thing they were showing that they showed at the press conference. And I'm like,
yeah,
man, if I'd waited any longer than 10 minutes for this, I would have been really pissed.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, yeah. For me, what disappointed me, and this kind of hurts, because whenever I go to this specific area every year, I come out with a few surprises that made me go, I can't wait for this to come out. And this year, IndieCade just was really bad with what they were showcasing.
I saw their booth. I think the only highlight they had like the little live band and the little lounge next door. I remember that.
That was a totally different setup that they had there.
Oh, was it?
Not even related to IndieCade. But
their IndieCade thing was like really crumped up. It was like, you know, they had so many games and everything like that. And it just, I don't know. I remember seeing like this one weird museum structure that I just avoided.
Because here's the thing. Because I initially had an appointment for them for Thursday, but I skipped out on it because I wanted to play Zelda. But, like, the day before, I went to the booth because I wanted to say hi to a couple people that were showcasing a game that I had already reviewed on the Esh site back in December, a game from Delirium Studios called The Delusions of Von Stoltendorf and His Square Mind, which is a great game, one of the best indie titles that came out last year. And they were awesome to actually be talking face-to-face with because I got to interview them many, many months ago. So it was nice to actually put a face on them. And looking at the other games that were surrounding this one that had already come out months ago, it was just a big disappointment. Like, I've seen Game Jam titles, Game Jam games that were created within 24 to like 48 hours that were more polished than what was being showcased at this year's IndieCade.
See, and that's the thing. I mean, like, that could have been space reserved for, you know, a classic arcade. Like, this year, we did not have a classic arcade on the show floor. We didn't really have anything that celebrated, like, where we grew up from. You know, and all these indie games, I think only, like, one caught my eye. And even then, I was, like, not able to see it, and I had to go on to my next appointment. You know, it's like the way they set it up was different from how PAX works, and it's almost like they didn't put in nearly enough effort.
Yeah, and because of that, it just was a bit of a turnoff, because I remember going to IndieCades in the past, and it was nice, big open areas that E3 was giving them, and this year, there was just like this small little vicinity, and the games that they were showing off just weren't as eye-popping as the ones that they showed in the past. Not even the card games that they were showing off. Like, I've walked away buying card games in the past at IndieCade. This year,
yeah, here it's
nothing.
Just nothing, I know.
It was very uninviting, too. I didn't even go in because it felt like they didn't really want you to go in. I didn't feel very welcomed.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you compare it to, like, other booths. You know, like, you can walk into 2K's thing, and even if you're not seeing Mafia 3, you can chill and listen to the band. You know, or, like, Twitch's booth. You know, Twitch actually had pretty good presence at the show floor this year with their booth and everything like that. And they were really cool. They had a bunch of different talents on hand that were talking to people and everything like that. They were giving out these little stickers. Like, you do the Hi, My Name Is thing there. They even had, like, the partner booth where you could stop by and get some sunglasses or whatever, you know. But IndieCade just looked like a business suite.
Yeah.
It didn't even look like that. It looked like a Starbucks corner.
Yeah.
And it hurts me to say this because I love IndieCade and I like what they usually do. But this year, it was just like... It hurts to say that because I really appreciate what IndieCade has done in the past. But this year, it was just really uninspired.
Yeah, I think next year what they need to do, what Game Developers Conference does. They just need to set up the, like, little units in a row there and have the producers just stand by those instead of just doing the separate desks thing and everything like that. Because there's no guide telling you what games are where. There's nothing to really point out. You're kind of forced to explore and everything like that. And there are a lot of us that were on appointments that were set up and everything like that. I mean, if you're just roaming the show floor like Marcia was, then you've got time to explore and take a look. Oh, this is coming out. Oh, what platform, you know, and everything like that. But I don't know. There's just a better way that could be going into an organization, I think.
I couldn't agree more. Now, I know we're running short on time, but before we, like, end things off, I wanted to ask, game of the show, what was it for you guys?
Playable or non-playable?
either or. What was, like, the best game that you saw showcased at E3 this year?
I'll let April go first.
Well, the best game that I didn't see, because I basically had to watch it all on YouTube, would have been Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild. And yeah, I didn't get a hands-on. I didn't even get to go into the damn booth. But I watched a good, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours of it on YouTube with my husband. And it was just making me itch to play that game and, you know, go back and play some of the other Legend of Zelda games. If we're going to talk about games I had hands-on, and again, because I didn't have hands-on on a lot of stuff, I'm still going to go with Ghost Recon Wildlands. I'm really excited to play that. I'm hoping it's not disappointing. I did also read that there's going to be full character customization with it, so you can actually, you know, customize the gender and the look and ethnicity of your characters, and so I'm actually just really kind of amped about that. So those would be my best.
Alright, DCD?
Best game I saw is a tie between God of War and Spider-Man. I'm going to give God of War the nod because of its different direction. Some people are complaining it's too much like The Last of Us, but I kind of like this new direction.
I do too.
It. You know, some people are just like, well, you're just guiding around a kid. You don't understand. This kid probably paid for his life because Kratos is his dad.
You know, Redmond actually brought up a really interesting idea. Like, what if you're playing it, and what if, you know, what if Kratos actually dies and you end up playing the son? Just sort of a complete just reversal of what the God of War series was. So instead of the father avenging the family, it's the son avenging his father's death or something, which I thought would be a really interesting twist.
Like, maybe, like, I wouldn't say, like, right then and there after, like, the first demo that you were showcased there. Maybe, sure, like, something happens to the father when the kid's a teenager, when he's starting to showcase the Kratos mentality that you've seen in the past video games.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then as for Spider-Man, I mean, like, I expected Sucker Punch to be developing this, not the guys that did, you know, like, this whole Song of the Deep game that's coming out next month, or Sunset Overdrive. You know, having Insomniac in charge of a Spider-Man game is pretty damn bonkers, if you think about it. I mean, they took everything that looks like it worked so well in the previous Spider-Man games, but they're adding a whole bunch of other stuff to make it immersive and original. They're not even basing it off Homecoming. You know, it's just, it looks like it's going to be a really well-realized start to Marvel Games' plan, because they're working on a plan to involve more of their comic properties in original games. They don't want to make licensed games anymore. So Spider-Man's kind of the beginning of that.
And hopefully we'll see more of that in the near future.
Yeah. So those are the best games I saw. The best game I played, I'm going to say Ghost Recon. I was really very well impressed by how well this turned out. It was polished. It played great. It was a lot of fun. So, yeah, it was. I'm blown away by it. And, yes, April, I will be on your team. You don't even need to ask.
Me too. All right, for what I saw, I actually feel like I need to give it to Mafia 3. Because I was just taken aback by how immersive this world that they're creating is going to be. I love the Louisiana setting. And just the whole strategic aspect of Mafia 3, where you have to, like, divvy up everything equally or else you're going to get screwed in the end. I like that aspect because it's not just another dumb shooter sort of thing. You need to think on your feet and you need to think financially too while you're playing this game. And I think that's going to be amazing when it comes out this October.
Yep.
As for what I actually went hands-on with, I know a lot of people are going to think I'm going to say Zelda. No. You see, with me, I always give this sort of award to a game that not only deserves it, but needs to be pushed out a lot more towards the mainstream crowd. And for me, that goes to Shantae Half-Genie Hero.
I knew this was coming.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm a little bit predictable. I am so sorry. But, you know, Shantae needs to get a lot more respect within the gaming industry and the gaming realm. She is one of the best heroines out there. And I just don't see why anybody else isn't giving her the credit that she rightfully deserves. And I feel like that this new one that's coming out, Half-Genie Hero, could potentially be one of this year's best platformers. I was wowed by what they did with Pirate's Curse. I can't wait to see what they're going to be able to pull off in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get to see too much of it, but I mean, I know Way Forward. Shantae is their baby.
Yes.
You know, they do side stuff like, you know, Double Dragon Neon, you know, DuckTales Remastered, they do stuff like that. But every time they get their hands on a Shantae game, that is their baby. They take good care of their Shantae game. So this is going to be a really good game that's going to come out.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to be playing this. I can't wait to be playing Mafia 3. I can't wait to be checking out Wildlands. There's just so much that they showed off at E3 this year that I just cannot wait to wrap my fingers around the controller and press start.
Mm-hmm. It's just really amazing how, like, some of these smaller games, like, I'll even tell you, like, I'll even give a nod to Atlus and King of Fighters 14. Mm-hmm. I actually gave that more of a nod than Persona 5. And people are like, but Persona 5! Yes, I know, Persona 5 is going to be amazing, you know, game for lovers, February 14th, whatever. But King of Fighters is a nice return to form for the series. We haven't seen a new King of Fighters in years.
Right.
So this is, you know, this is a nice little, you know, welcome back sort of thing. So I'm looking forward to that.
And the Atlus booth was nuts this year. Like, if it wasn't the Zelda booth, it was Atlus that had the most people.
Oh, dude, everybody was lined up to get their Persona hats and their Persona bags and all that stuff. You know, it was insane. Even, like, they even had, like, producers come out, and it was like church. You know, it was like, oh, bless you who have given us Teddy. I mean, I'm not that feverish. It's a great series, but a lot of people just, like, surrounded, like, Persona like it was the second coming.
Well, you gotta remember, it's been what? How many years since Persona 4 actually first came out in the PlayStation 2? A lot of people have been waiting a long time for the fifth one.
I agree. You know, it was great to see such a crowd and everything like that, but they need a bigger booth next year.
Agreed.
Because seriously, I could not get through their booth. I kept having to go around.
I couldn't even get around it. Like, I couldn't even. The one I really wanted to play was the new Rock of Ages game, and I couldn't go hands on with it. And I had to find the Yakuza 0 game in the PlayStation booth in order to play that.
See, that's why I enjoyed, you know, Devolver Digital. It's nice. It was chill. You could go in and play Absolver for like an hour if you wanted to. And then Shadow Warrior 2. I swear to God, the coolest thing I remember about Shadow Warrior 2 was like slicing up an enemy, and then when they're dead, I kept taking my katana blade and slicing up their corpse, and I swear to God, you could slice them into ham slices if you wanted to. And it was amazing. And it was like, now I'm hungry for some rice bowls.
Yeah.
Rice bowls in hand.
Rice bowls in hand. All right, guys.
That's our episode. Look at that.
Yes, that is our episode. Thank you,
I didn't even walk over everybody. That's amazing.
Thank you, everybody, for coming on to this special E3 2016 post-show. And this is where I want you guys to start doing your promo stuff. And, Robert, why don't you go first?
Okay, well, first off, I want to say how great it was to see you guys in the show.
Absolutely.
I especially missed April. I haven't seen April in a little while there. And I remember, like, last year when we hung out at Star Wars Celebration, we went to that awesome little bar in Anaheim. That was a good time. It was me, her, and Norman, her husband. And it was just a blast. I mean, we didn't need to do anything like that this year, but we did that podcast. We got to hang out, like, after the show over there at Yard House. So I had a good time. So I want to, of course, thank everybody for listening to the show. You can find my work. Well, first of all, you can find me at twitter.com/thedcd. You can find me on Facebook, Robert Workman. And you can find my work at maroonersrock.com, opshead.com, primagames.com, and alistdaily.com. You can find us at the ARC Podcast at retrozap.com. And just really, thanks for having me on. I'm not doing any more E3 podcasts, though. This is
I appreciate gone. That this is the last one you're doing.
I'm done. Sorry, I'm done.
No more podcasts. What?
Well, not for E3. I mean, I've been through like 280.
A lot.
All right, April, why don't you do a little promo? I know you're under our umbrella, but still, do you do some promo?
Yeah, you can find me. Of course, I write for Electric Sisterhood, so you can find me on electricsisterhood.com. You can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram, and the handle is at Bjerk for both of those. That's B-Y-E-R-K. And you can also follow Electric Sisterhood's Twitter, which is ESH News. And that's pretty much it. My Facebook profile is private, so you can't really follow me there. But I do tweet and I do Instagram a lot, and that's pretty much where you can find me.
Oh, sure. Don't say it was great seeing me either, April. Okay.
Sorry. Oh, nice. It was to actually finally meet me in person.
No, you know, it was really nice to actually meet Evan and Ben in person. I hadn't met them before, so it was really cool to meet them. We hung out a lot with Brandon Hofer from
Gaming Target.
Yeah, from Gaming Target. And it was, and then I did also get to hang out with some friends. I had Redmond Carlipio as well as Jennifer Villarreal and her husband Warren. So that was really nice to be able to see them and hang out. I did not get to see Jessica, however, because she was very busy. So I will have to hang out.
See, I haven't seen Jessica in years.
Yeah, Jess is great. I saw her in the show floor a couple times. She's doing really well with Machinima, so I wish her nothing but the best.
Yeah. And you know what? It was great shooting shit with you about anime after E3 was over too, April. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was really cool. I haven't listened to any podcasts yet, but I have them all downloaded and ready. And I wanted to add one more thing.
It was great seeing Robert. No, I'm sorry.
yeah, it was awesome to see Robert. and going off Rob also, because we did see him there as well. Another place actually that you can find me, I do have another Instagram for my Etsy shop, and I'm not trying to like put like, hey, buy my stuff, but you can see some of the stuff I'm doing at Level Up Crafts. That's my my Instagram on for all the like crafty crap I do, and I do a lot of geeky stuff. And if you want to follow my cats, it's BB8 and Midna, which are two little geeky cats that we have.
Nice.
Oh man.
Now before I do all my usual promo stuff, I want to give a heads up for our listeners for our upcoming episodes of No Borders No Race, because as some people may know, No Borders No Race will be celebrating its 10th anniversary all throughout July and into August. The very first episode of No Borders No Race aired on July 11th, 2006 on Salem State College Radio, back on 91.7 WFWM Salem. And for these next 5 episodes of No Borders No Race, we'll be counting down the top 100 albums that were released between 2006 and 2015. No repeat artists unless someone was in more than one band. with artists from Japan, the US, UK, Germany, and the Scandinavian landscape. We'll have artists like Beck, Maximum the Hormone, The Killers, Tom Waits, Teddy Bears, Baby Metal, Savages, Anasuchiya, Nick Cave, The Bad Seeds, Guitar Wolf, Nico Case, Five Iron Frenzy, and dozens more that will be showcased on this top 100 list. And yes, even Kanye made it on there. I know some of you don't like Kanye West, but you can't deny that he has made at least one amazing album in these last 10 years.
You better have Bjork on that list, or I'm out of here.
There's the door. Knowing Evan, he's added everybody.
And also on the B3 site, we'll be counting down the top 50 anime series from 2006 to 2015. Most of these shows have been licensed here in the US, whereas a couple have mistakenly not been. So I'm going to try and see if I can help correct that little error. So for my usual promo stuff, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bash Brigade, you can find us on www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for our friend Sawa Sensei, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can find me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, on Twitter at king_baby_duck, on Anime Amino at kingbaby.esh, and on Twitch at twitch.tv/ommysteryinc. You can like us on facebook.com/boss-brigade and also on facebook.com/landofesh. And as Beard mentioned a little bit of, don't forget about all the other sites under the Land of Esh, including The Electric Sisterhood, Phil's Recap and Review, Nerd Crave, Smash Rook, and The Structure Network. Woo! Yes.
Are you okay? Are you gonna pass out?
I have my beer here. I'm okay.
It's always impressive, man. It is always impressive.
Yes. So, guys, thank you once again for joining me here for this post E3 2016 podcast show. And I hope that some of these games that we talked about, you'll go on to like Amazon or GameStop or some gaming website and pre-order them. We hope you do.
Go buy Shantae.
I've already got a bunch of games pre-ordered, man. I'm going to be so broke in November. It's not even funny.
I already have Dishonored 2, the Collector's Edition pre-ordered.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I did that and lied while waiting for my caricature. I went on to Amazon like, pre-order.
Yep, I was waiting for it to come up. I was not going to make it a Fallout 4 collectible edition mishap. I did not get that one.
I got the Pip-Boy pre-ordered 2 minutes into that presentation.
I waited like an idiot, but I also have Last Guardian Collector's Edition because why not? And I did pre-order the Battlefield 1 Collector's Edition because again, why not?
What about you, DCD?
Yeah, here I am wanting Gears 4.
Oh, my husband.
I want that controller. I want that controller
for the Wii U.
But anyways, I think it's time that we stick a fork into this podcast show and head on to our consoles because I think we should play some video games right now. So,
yeah.
Until next time, this is your King Baby Duck, Evan Borgo.
This is the DCD.
And this is April, or Bjork.
Reminding you that you do not have to be from Boston to be a bastard, but it sure helps.
It beats you to the punch. I am overtaking this podcast.
Awesome.